Welcome to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and today we're going to be talking with author Connie Lounsbery about her new historical fiction novel, A Hobo's Wish, and her upcoming presentation at many branches of the Great River Regional Library System about hobos of the Great Depression era, as well as the CCC Boys during the 1930s and how that turned into the WPA that then helped this country get out of the Great Depression. So, Connie, thanks for joining me today on the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. And how about we just start off with, well, you've got a few other books, and how did you decide on the topic of hobos for this one?
I wanted my next book to be about people doing good. You know, there's just, all the news is so bad, and it just seems like there's just so much people doing bad things in the world. Even the reality shows, everybody has to try to get the better of the other guy. And I just wanted a book about people doing good. Mm-hmm. So in the process of deciding how I was going to do that, I decided to choose a hobo, someone who had nothing but still would find ways to do good, to bless other people, even though he didn't have money in which to do it, because sometimes we just don't think about the fact that there are an awful lot of things we can do for each other that don't cost money.
Yeah.
And so having chosen a hobo set during the Depression before I was born, I had to do a great amount of research. So I started by checking out the internet. I watched documentaries and I downloaded lots and lots of research about the Depression and the hobos and the CCC camps. Then I started reading library books. I have a stack of books about 2 feet high that I have purchased in addition to those that I just got from the library that I have read about the Depression and about the hobos and about the CCC camp and the CCC boys. And then I interviewed a lot of people. It's hard to find anyone that was really old enough to remember too much about that time. Some of the older people vaguely remember hobos coming to the kitchen door and their mothers feeding them, or maybe a hobo sleeping in their hayloft in their barn. So then I decided, as I'm writing this book in my head as I'm going along, I decided that this hobo would start out in Grand Island, Nebraska, drive down to Texas, and from there go to Palm Springs, California. So I flew to Palm Springs, California, and with my two sisters drove back to Minnesota following the train tracks that my character, Dr. Pete Walters, would have taken back to Minnesota. And then he comes back to what is Caffeine Creek, which is really Annandale, Minnesota, near me, and had the real personal experience of seeing the terrain that Pete would have seen as he's traveling along on the train. So that was the bulk of my research, and it took a long time, and I did an awful lot of research to learn about that era and about the hobos and what my character would have likely experienced during that time.
Nice. Yeah, there is a lot of that that's left over, you know, especially the train and the railroad tracks. Once you get out of the cities and into the country, you know, kind of following the highways or the, you know, the train tracks there, you know, there's a lot of nature out there. And, you know, that's all the same, too. So the can you give us maybe a little bit of history about the CCC camps and, you know, what were those and, you know, how did those, you know, affect this hobo community?
Well, the CCC camps, as far as I'm concerned, were the one thing that saved this country after President Roosevelt, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, got in 19, he started his term in 1933 and had his New Deal, as he called it, and one of the programs on his New Deal was civilian conservation camps. And at first, it was for boys 18 to 25, single, and their families, you know, would be, if their families were in need. And so the first enrollees in those CCC camps came on April 6, 1933. 25,000 men were enrolled immediately. By 1935, there were 1,200 camps, 240,000 men in the United States. And Minnesota alone had 104 camps with 18,500 men enrolled. That's how much of a need there was. In fact, the need was so great by 1935 that the government changed the qualifications from 17 to 28, two 17 to 28-year-olds extended that qualifications. Now, these CCC boys were paid $30 a month. However, only $5 went to the boys, and the other $25 was automatically sent to their family. Now, today, that $25 would be equivalent to something over $500. So can you imagine what that meant to the families where the fathers had been unemployed already for years? They were probably on relief, but that was never enough even to feed their families. And it was just a godsend to many, many families. It just, I think, saved the country at that time. Then, of course, after that, Roosevelt had the WPA program, too, where older men could work, you know, doing highway construction and several other things. I remember my grandfather worked for the WPA. So these young men that participated as CCC boys, over the years, they built 125,000 miles of roads. They installed 89,000 miles of telephone lines, built 13,100 miles of trails, planted 2 to 3 billion trees, and these young men generally gained 11.5 pounds average in the first 3 months of enlistment, because usually when they enrolled, they were just so emaciated from practically being starved for a few years. And during that time, 79 young men lost their lives fighting forest fires. So they worked hard, and in fact, the CC camps were affectionately nicknamed Colossal College of Calluses. And a couple of the famous CCC boys that you and I both know are Raymond Burr and Walter Matthau. But I've talked to many people who say their fathers or their grandfathers had worked in the CCC camps. Yeah. And right in Minnesota here alone, most of our state and federal camps, national camps, were built by the CCC boys. Up north, you know, around the North Shore, all of those, you know, the trails up in the Boundary Waters and all of that.
Wow.
So they did hard work, but they got fed good, they learned discipline, and they also got good training as far as the fact that just a few years later, most of them ended up serving in World War II. So that was another good thing. You know, they were fit and strong and ready to do that. And they got an education there as well. They were trained for many, many different kinds of work, and many of them had been hobos before they enrolled. You know, there were over 250,000 teenaged boys and girls riding the rails during those 30s. You know, that was the answer to those young people at that time, and the answer to the families who just, you know, whose families were starving, not getting even the food that they needed.
Yeah, they just didn't know what to do. Yeah, I hear that. So there is a book that I read a while back. It's written by a guy by the name of Jack Black. Now that's not the comedian from these days. This is from, you know, way back, long time ago, where when he was a kid, he was a kid like just post Civil War, and he was in like Kansas and Missouri, and things just weren't all that great. There really was no safety net whatsoever, and he ended up riding the rails and just going to, you know, wherever he could find a place. The book is called You Can't Win, and it sounds a little pessimistic, and some of it seems that way as you're going through it, but then you get to see this kind of this light at the end of the tunnel, because this guy ended up being head librarian for the city of like San Francisco eventually. But in his younger years, there was nothing. You didn't have to go to school. If you were starving and your family didn't want you, you just up and left. Which is what he did. And then he retold his story later because people were just flabbergasted about how he existed.
Yes, I have that book. It's one of the many books in my stack of hobo books that I have read.
Awesome.
Along with, many, many others.
Yeah, we just don't have that frame of reference anymore for what the world was like. And then, by little steps, then it changes, these programs. Like you were saying, the CCC camps go and they transform in the WPA, and then all those folks are then, when World War II happens, then, these people are, they're fit and they're ready.
We recently went through a bad recession, and one would have thought that the people would have remembered the Depression, because many of the same things happened. Of course, not as many, because, back then, a real quick, simplified version of a complicated issue of the Depression was, that started already back in the mid-20s when crop prices began falling and land values plummeted. And the poor farmers worked all year, produced a crop, and they weren't even able to pay their seed bills after they sold their crops. And so farmers were really getting desperate. They were, many of them, keeping their crop and burning it for fuel in the winter. Mm. And then when we had Black Friday, when the stock market crashed October 29th, 1929, many people became penniless overnight. Then the banks began to collapse at the rate of 10 a day, and setting off waves of panic. And that was followed by the severe drought that for many years resulted in farmers being unable to grow crops at all. If we don't get rain, we don't get crops. And they couldn't feed their animals, and they were killing their animals because they couldn't feed them. And, of course, then we had the terrible dust storms that swept across the land because of the soil erosion. And that was killing animals and people. So farmers just were abandoning their farms and heading west to find work as migrant workers. And then by the early 30s, the Depression really settled over the country, and the men couldn't even find jobs. Mines closed, businesses closed because they extended credit to their customers, and the customers couldn't pay them, so they couldn't pay their suppliers. Then they couldn't get credit from their suppliers, so they couldn't stay in business. So pretty soon, the country was just full of unemployed men everywhere you looked. And displaced families were setting up communities of cardboard, sheet metal, and tents. And they called them Hoovervilles after the president that they blamed for not doing anything to help the country. So that was the state of the American people during the 1930s. Right into the beginning of World War II. And, I think some of us, if we would have remembered what happened back then, we would have tried to eliminate some of what was happening during our recession, like getting in debt so much that when we lost our jobs, we couldn't pay our bills. So, those are the kind of things we need to remember. We need to remember our past so that we can do better in the future.
You're in tune to 88.1 FM KVSC and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. Today, we're talking with author Connie Lounsbery about her novel, A Hobo's Wish, and the research that went into the completion of the book. Lounsbery will be at the Great River Regional Library in Monticello tonight on a Thursday, January 26th, beginning at 6:45 p.m. And now, as we get back into our conversation, we talk about how our preconceived notions of the hobo world don't always sync up with reality.
Some people think that being a hobo during those years was really a thing of fun and adventure. And, you know, we have hobos even today, or sometimes people are still hopping the rails today for some change or some adventure. But, you know, it was very, very dangerous for those hobos back then. Because, they had to hop a train when the train was moving. They couldn't do it when the train was stopped because they had yard dicks, detectives in the depot areas that were hired to keep hobos off the trains. And then once they got on a train, there were cinder bowls, they called them, other policing agents, that the railroad hired to keep the hobos off the trains. And because it was illegal to be a homeless migrant, you know, that was, they would arrest you if they caught you on riding a train illegally. And that meant prison or hard labor. And then there also was the jack rollers, who were the thieves that were on the trains harvesting the harvesters, they called themselves, because they were targeting the hobos who had been on a job working and would have some money. And so they had blackjacks and or guns, and they would rob the hobos, often killing them or forcing them off the train at high speeds. And so it was very, very dangerous to be a hobo out there. So 6,500 people were killed trying to hop a train, so that wasn't an easy thing to do over either. So, you know, it was not an easy life. You know, they had to find a place to sleep. So they slept in abandoned buildings or under bridges or in haylofts, in empty boxcars, flop houses. Sometimes you could get a flop house for 10 cents a night, but they had lice. Sometimes jailers would give hobos what they called a courtesy call. They'd let them sleep in jail overnight and give them a meal. So that was, you know, one way that they were helping the hobos along too, but it wasn't every jailer who was that friendly and nice. But yeah, they had what they called hobo jungles, where the hobos were safe. That was a place always along a river where there would be access to water. It was a camp set up just for hobos, and a hobo could go in there and sleep safely, bathe in the river, wash their clothes, and get a meal, because they'd make mulligan stew every night. And, of course, every hobo was expected to contribute something to the camp. It was a place where they could be safe. So there was that the hobos had. And they usually didn't stay very long unless they were sick or they could recuperate there. Otherwise, it was just a stopping-off place to take care of themselves and wash their clothes and so forth for a night or two. But it was a place where they could be safe. You know, I've read so many books and watched so many documentaries, and the hobos all say that it was a tough, tough life. They wouldn't want to do it again, but there was something about the train whistle and riding on those trains that really did satisfy some of their longings for adventure. So there was a little bit of that, too. But most of it was just really, really a tough life. But most hobos were honorable people. They weren't tramps and they weren't bums, and they were very highly insulted if someone called them that, because a tramp would travel, but he would not work. And a bum was somebody who couldn't work. He was either an alcoholic or mentally unstable. But a hobo was a man who traveled to find work. They had their code of ethics among themselves, and they, one of the things that they strived to do was try to talk young people into going back home and to kind of watch out for the young people. And, of course, it wasn't just men. There were women and girls and sometimes whole families that were riding the rails. And often the young girls would try to camouflage themselves by tucking their hair into a newsboy cap and wearing boys' clothes and just trying to not let anyone know they were female. And, of course, there were always the women out there traveling who would trade sexual favors for another male hobo who would take her under his wing and keep her safe. So, and there were a certain amount of prostitutes in the riding the rails and on the roads as well, as there always is.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a different life. Absolutely, it was a different life. But from everything I've learned, most of the hobos were very honorable men. They were the first, one of the early migrant workers. They traveled, they all were traveling west to try to find work harvesting crops. And there were many, many different crops that they could harvest throughout the United States. And some of the, especially the young teenagers, found jobs washing dishes at restaurants. That's called pearl diving.
You know, now, I've also heard that they had their own way of communicating as well.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes. That was one very interesting thing. They had their codes that they would leave messages for other hobos. That was just one more way that they were helping each other. You know, if they would scrawl a picture of a kitty, it meant a kind-hearted lady. Or a circle with an X in the middle meant that place was good for a handout. And, you know, another code would let someone know that they'd let you sleep in the barn. Then there were also little scratches that they would put, warning hobos that was an unsafe place or that you would be arrested on sight or not to go that direction. And then, you know, another code that would say there's work available there. So they were really good about helping each other along the way to let other hobos know if there was danger or if it was a good place that they could get food or work.
Yeah, it's kind of that method, those methods of communication. You know, I think we kind of take that for granted these days because we can just send off an email or make a phone call or post something online, but... Yeah, you know, now, you know, back then, you know, they carved something into a tree so people could understand
right.
when they came along.
Post a tree and a door, you know, doorstep or sidewalk or something like that. So
mm-hmm.
It was a different kind of life back then for those people, but you know, they really struggled to survive. And they learned that if they would go 3 days without food, they would become weak and shaky. So they always tried to eat something at least every 3 days. And I think about that. My goodness, I don't think I could last 3 days without food.
I know.
And yes, many of them did.
Yeah, you skip breakfast by about 1 o'clock, you're getting a little edgy. You know, so.
I know. Isn't that the truth?
Mm-hmm. So let's kind of finish things up by just talking about the presentations you're going to be doing here at the Great River Regional Library. You've got one coming up today in Monticello, and you've got a couple others. So
yes, I'll be in Eden Valley Library on February 4th, Saturday at 10 a.m., and at the St. Cloud Library on March 11th, which is a Saturday at 11 a.m., and I'll be in the Delano Library on October 17th. on a Tuesday evening at 6:30. And I've been gone and haven't done much marketing in Hennepin County, but I'm going to start talking to them soon and hoping to get some appearances in Hennepin County as well. So I'm available for any library or historical center. My last presentation was at the Kimball Historical Center. So that's another good venue to do this presentation. So, and I have a blog that people can find me at my website at connielonsberry.com. And my book is A Hobo's Wish. And I started a scholarship for other writers through Initiative Foundation. And that's about everything I have going on right now. So I do other presentations as well at churches and for Stonecroft Ministry and other places. But I'm really trying to focus now on Hobos of the Great Depression presentations.
Nice. Yeah, because it is such a different world, and you know, our world is changing. So it's like, well, what can we learn from this?
Right, and yeah. I think there are many things we can learn. One is that that was a time of people helping each other, and we need to do more of that. And the other thing I see is farmers seem to be plowing up every piece of land there is available. All the meadows that were unplowed before are now under the plow, and they're planting everything. And I think back to what caused the soil erosion back during the Depression, and I hope we don't have another drought, because we'd have problems with so much bare land, and it's just, it would be nice to just spend a little more time taking care of each other as well. One of the things that I think this is a good topic, because we still today have so many homeless people. You know, at any given day in Minnesota alone, we have 15,000 homeless people. I read that recently, and I could hardly believe it. 15,000 in Minnesota alone. Now, of course, 60% of them have a serious mental illness, and 51% of them have a chronic health condition. And many of them are, of course, soldiers that are suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome or are injured and handicapped. And, you know, we still have a big homeless problem. And, you know, I'm kind of hoping that just talking about this is going to make people more aware of the homeless people, and maybe we can be a little kinder to them as well.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Connie, thanks for talking with us today at the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota.
Well, thank you for allowing me to talk with you. It's been wonderful.
And we've been talking with Connie Lounsbury here on the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. She'll be discussing her book, A Hobo's Wish, as well as Hobos of the Great Depression and the CCC Boys during the 1930s in numerous Great River Regional Library branches over the coming months, including today, Thursday, January 26th, in Monticello, starting at 6:45 p.m., Eden Valley on Saturday, February 4th at 11 a.m., and then in St. Cloud on March 11th, also at 11 a.m. For links to more information on these, as well as to Connie Lounsbury's website, you can find those links at kvsc.org under the Podcasts and Untold Stories of Central Minnesota tab. This has been Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota is made possible through a grant from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and has been produced at KVSC, a proud member of Amperz, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's communities.